Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Behind Enemy Lines. I'm your host, Alejandro Zuniga, here from the Michigan Insider, michigan.247sports.com. The Michigan football team dominated on the road against Nebraska this past weekend, 45-7, made it look easy, and they are heading back west for another Big Ten showdown, battle for the little brown jug against the Golden Gophers, Saturday night at Huntington Bank Stadium. That's a 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. We're going to be talking all about the Gophers with Ryan Burns, who covers them for Gopher Illustrated, part of our 24/7 sports network. And then we will turn our attention to a very busy week at Michigan State. There was NIL news, there was a football game that they played and lost, and then there was the beginning of their national coaching search as the Spartans look toward the future of their program and what will follow after the fallout from Mel Tucker. No Ohio State segment this week, as the Buckeyes were on a bye, but there is plenty of good intel about the Gophers, of course, about what's happening in East Lansing. So let's dive right in. Here's my conversation with Ryan Burns from Gopher Illustrated. Welcoming to the show today, Ryan Burns, who covers the Minnesota Gophers over at Gopher Illustrated. It's been a up and down start to the season for Minnesota this year, Ryan. The Gophers are 3-2, 3-0 at home, 0-2 on the road. Notable wins over Nebraska to open up the season. Coming in off a win off Louisiana last week, 35-24, with losses at UNC. And then the one that really jumps out and kind of reverberated across the college football world a little bit was that come from behind loss to Northwestern. So I just want to take a quick look at the Minnesota program as a whole, right? PJ Fleck is in his seventh year as Minnesota's coach. It's a program that maybe quietly has back-to-back 9-win seasons. I say maybe quietly because maybe that's the perspective of someone who covers Michigan. Michigan and Minnesota haven't really played a whole lot recently. They played in 2020, which is a year that, for many reasons, Michigan fans like to forget. 2017, that was a game at Michigan Stadium that was at night, a rain delay that Michigan won. And then the one that kind of, well, one of the symbolic wins of the early Harbaugh tenure was that 2015 game that Michigan won with a goal line stand in the final seconds. So it feels like PJ Fleck has developed this program into his own without really playing Michigan a whole lot. So Ryan, give us a bit of insight. How has he done that? Are Minnesota fans happy with what PJ Fleck has done? What's the trajectory of this program as we're entrenched in the Fleck era?
Yeah, I'd say the older fans would tell you they're not too thrilled that the little brown jug isn't played for every year. Now, myself being 31 years old, I'm incredibly apathetic to it compared to Minnesota playing teams like Iowa or Wisconsin every year. But you mentioned it, and I think people forget about it sometimes. The last three full seasons, when you take out the COVID years, so 19, 22, and 21, they've won 9 games or more. Like, this is the University of Minnesota, and you have to have your expectations aligned that you're not going to be Michigan every year. Now, this year has certainly not gone, I would say, as expected. Now, I was there in Evanston for one of the biggest meltdowns I've ever seen in the fourth quarter. You're up 21 points with 13 minutes to go. Find a way to lose it on the last play of the game, lose it on the first play, then in overtime. I mean, it was a debacle. But that's where, you know, you wonder what the perception is of this game. If Minnesota just hangs on to a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter against Northwestern, and they're 4-1, Michigan 5-0. But I would say that I think expectations for when he came here to where he is now in year 7, now we'll see how the rest of the season goes for Minnesota, but I think he's slightly exceeded expectations, I would say. Now, the only thing that I wouldn't say in terms of exceeding them is you won 9 or more games each of the last 3 full seasons and you never won a Big Ten West. You found so many different ways to not win the West, which allowed teams like Iowa and even Purdue last year to go to Indianapolis and not you. So we'll see what happens here with the rest, because as you've seen from the Big Ten West here into October, it is arguably the westiest of all the Wests, with Cade McNamara now going out for the year. Wisconsin looks okay, and maybe they're the favorite now. I'm not incredibly sure, but it's certainly going to be an interesting one. But I think Fleck has done a pretty good job here at Minnesota.
Hey, don't count out Northwestern, right?
Yeah.
But diving into the Gophers, let's start with quarterback as we usually do, just because that's the position that is typically the most important one on the football field. Gophers are led by Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who through the year has got a 59% completion percentage, 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, averaging 149 yards passing per game. He's decently mobile. He's got a couple touchdowns on the ground, a net gain of 92 rushing yards so far this season. Take us through what he brings to this offense. I know that Minnesota, like Michigan, is a team that likes to run the ball. So, you know, if you look at, say, J.J. McCarthy's stats, they're not the gaudiest stats, despite the fact that he's arguably one of the top quarterbacks in the country right now. What should Michigan fans expect out of Kaliak-Manis?
They should look at the game log, and I think it kind of tells the story in terms of he played all right in his first couple of games. Now, at least two of his interceptions hit the tight end directly in the hands and then just bounced to a guy. It's not where he completely threw. It was just a complete errant pass. He's had a couple of his interceptions be just hitting a guy in the hands, and it just goes right to a defender. But I think the last 2 weeks they've taken a lot off his plate, trying to see what he can handle, because this is his first true year as the guy. Now, I know he started games for them last year down the stretch, but for him, it's just a mentality, I think. He's only a third-year quarterback, someone that doesn't have a ton of experience. I think this will be his 10th or 11th start, and his 6th start as the guy. But you look at the last 2 weeks where he's completing 78% of his passes, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, I think that's a more accurate representation of how he's been playing of late. So he's been playing a lot better coming into this game. But I'll say this. I mean, Minnesota's, I have just fully come around to, they're not going to be able to run the ball against Michigan. Peace and love to the Minnesota Moving Company up front, trying to run the ball against Michigan so far this year. And I understand that many Gopher fans tell me, well, who has Michigan played? I hear you. But that Michigan team defensively is so, so stout. And that's where the last couple of weeks, he's only thrown the ball 14 to 19 times. Well, in this game, he's going to have to probably throw the ball 30 times if Minnesota's going to win. So it's going to be trying to keep him upright, trying to make sure that he's got a clean pocket to deliver it from. He was tremendous on play action last week. I completed 100% of his throws with both touchdowns. So it's going to be trying to figure out a way to continue to keep him in rhythm, which they have been able to do the last couple of weeks.
You mentioned that he hasn't really thrown the ball a whole lot. Maybe one of those reasons is because Chris Autman-Bell hasn't really been a factor this year, right? I was really excited at Big Ten Media Day because when they listed the players who were coming, it said Chris Autman-Bell - 7th year, which is a lot of years to be playing college football. I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, that he was recovering from a knee injury, maybe an ACL, and that's the reason he hasn't really factored a whole lot, if at all, this year. So when Kaliak-Manis is, you know, is potentially throwing the ball more than he's used to in this game against Michigan, who are the targets that he's going to be looking out for?
Yeah, Chris Autman-Bell is about a year-ish now removed from his ACL and meniscus. So it wasn't just one thing. It was a major knee surgery. And I tried to tell people all offseason that any expectations for him in September, whatever you have, they're more lofty than I had. That's why he doesn't have a catch. He was out last week after being questionable the previous few weeks. So I think Minnesota's hoping to get him back after the bye, which is after this Michigan game. You know, their tight end, Brevin Spann-Ford, has been an enigma. Part of why this passing game has struggled is because there were a ton of expectations for Brevin Spann-Ford. And one of the best Pro Football Focus graded tight ends last year, 80-plus grades. I believe it. I mean, he played really well, had the most catches for Minnesota tight end since Matt Spaeth did it in 2006. And he just flat out hasn't been good. I mentioned that Kaliak-Manis had a couple of interceptions just come off the tight end's hands. That's Spann-Ford's. I mean, a 6-year guy who has NFL aspirations, that was on NFL draft boards, And it just hasn't gone well for him in the first five games of the year. And they're trying to figure out how to get him back on track. But I'd say the two guys that are probably going to be number one and number two in targets on Saturday, two wide receivers, one by the name of Daniel Jackson, who has really come onto the scene here, I would say, in the last 12 games, last six of last year, plus the bowl game, plus the first five of this year. He's coming off a two-touchdown performance last week. And then Western Michigan transfer Corey Crooms has been really good for Minnesota in the slot. So as Minnesota tries to figure out ways to move the ball on this defense, I would say that you're going to see a lot of number nine, Daniel Jackson. Then you'll also be seeing a lot of Corey Crooms as well.
Now, Ryan, you mentioned that you don't think, after watching some film, that Minnesota is going to be able to run the ball super effectively on Michigan. But so far this year, that sort of has been their bread and butter, right? And it's been funny, a little eye-opening, I think, every week when we get the Big Ten Player of the Week emails. To scroll down and see a Minnesota running back on there, it feels like every single week.
Right.
So run game has been successful. Big Ten Freshman of the Week, bunch of awards in a row. I know injury has been an issue there. Darius Taylor, I know, missed the last game. But who are the running backs? Who are those players who have been so electric so far this year? And I guess more importantly, on the offensive line, who are the guys who they're running behind that actually makes that possible?
Yeah, the Minnesota Moving Company has been better. Game one against Nebraska, they were out of sorts. They didn't run the ball well at all in that game. Fleck took that very personally. They came out and ran it against Eastern Michigan about 50 times to kind of prove some things. They were able to run the ball some against North Carolina. They were able to run the ball against Northwestern. Obviously, again, last week, that's how you have a Minnesota freshman running back has now, as you said, been the four-time reigning Freshman of the Week in the Big Ten. Now, they're led by Darius Taylor, someone who played at Walled Lake Western, someone that I believe Michigan tried to flip last year in his senior year. They weren't able to get it done. The question is he going to be back for this game? He missed last week's game after on his 31st carry against Northwestern. He was rolled up on a little bit. Fleck came out and said after the game on Saturday that Darius didn't practice all week. So I have a hard time kind of believing that Darius is going to go from all DNPs in practice the week before to playing in this game against Michigan, especially with a bye week coming up. And that's where, if Darius isn't able to go, you're going to be looking at a guy like Zach Evans, who's now the reigning Big Ten Freshman of the Week. I would say he's the most talented of probably the backs they use, someone who had 85 yards, 15 carries, bigger back, north-south type of guy, but can make a man miss. They've also got Sean Tyler there, another Western Michigan transfer. Just went over 3,000 career FBS rushing yards last week. Certainly a one-cut-and-go guy, very much a speed back, someone that Minnesota's going to try to get on the perimeter. So if Minnesota is able to run the ball at any point on Saturday night, I think you're going to see a lot of number 26, Zach Evans. You're going to see a lot of Sean Tyler as well, number two, and then you'll see Bryce Williams on third downs. But, I mean, Minnesota's got to figure out a way to be able to move the ball on early downs, or else if Michigan just can pin their ears back, it's going to be a long day.
Now, defensively, Minnesota pretty consistent in the fact that their statistics kind of pop up near the middle of the Big Ten, currently allowing 21.6 points per game, 361 yards, 127 yards on the ground. I think all of those were actually ninth in the Big Ten. Against Louisiana, seven plays of 15 yards or more in the first half, including some QB runs, but they cleaned things up in the second half in that victory. What are there names to know on the Minnesota defense? Like, what are the things that they've done well? What are some areas you feel like Michigan could exploit?
Heading into that North Carolina game, Minnesota's defense had allowed 20 or more points in their previous eight games in each one of them. And now the last 3 weeks, they've allowed 31, 37, and 24. It's been a struggle here recently for them. You look at why did Minnesota allow 30-plus points to North Carolina and Northwestern? Well, it turns out when you allow over 400 passing yards per game, it's going to be tough to not allow a lot of points. And why is that? Because they're kept giving up explosive passing plays. I will say this, I'm intrigued to see what Minnesota does defensively in this game, because they have been largely pretty good at stopping the run, and they have been the entire Joe Rossi tenure. And I think Minnesota's defensive line will be probably the toughest test that they've had so far. Michigan, that being up front, I know that Minnesota East, which is what I call Rutgers because their defensive coordinator, Joe Harris-Simiak. Where was he before that? Minnesota. Rutgers offensive coordinator, Kirk Shiraka. Where was he before that? Minnesota. So I would imagine that Minnesota is having some conversations this week with some former position coaches or coordinators to say what worked against Michigan, what didn't work against Michigan. But last week against Louisiana, it was a step forward to an extent. I think Louisiana is probably a better team than what people give them credit for. They're one of the contenders in the Sun Belt this year, an offense that hadn't scored under 31 points in a game. Minnesota should have only allowed 17 in that game before a late 50-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter kind of spoiled that. But they're pretty good up front in terms of Minnesota's defensive line. Their linebackers are struggling. Their best linebacker hasn't played this year. He suffered a soft tissue injury in fall camp, number 45, Cody Lindenberg. And we haven't seen him yet. He's been out there in terms of trying to warm up. They haven't given him the green light yet. And once again, as I continue to say, with a bye week after Michigan, I'm wondering if they just give it another week to heal, get him up to speed on the bye week. But I think that Michigan is going to pick on Minnesota's linebackers with misdirection, different things to try and get their eyes out of the right spot. And then they're led in the secondary by Justin Wally and Tyler Newbin, Tyler Newbin being their best player. Second team all Big Ten selection last year. He's got three interceptions already so far this year. Someone that's going to play a lot of center field, especially on passing downs. So we're going to have to see how McCarthy versus Tyler Newbin goes on Saturday night.
Well, finally, Ryan, it's a 19.5-point spread at last check. Michigan's favored over the Gophers. It'll be a night game. Looking forward to that fall crisp weather in Minneapolis, as we were talking about, a stark difference from the high 80s, low 90s from the last couple days. As we're gearing up for this game, as we're gearing up for the battle for the Little Brown Jug, a rivalry, which I think I'm a little higher on than you are, maybe because Michigan wins that game a little bit more consistently than the Gophers. But well, what are you going to be looking for on Saturday evening? How do you see the game playing out, or what's one specific area that you'll really be keying in on during the game?
Well, it's probably because I have flashbacks to one of the most recent times where Michigan came here. Minnesota thinks they score a touchdown within the final minute of the game from a guy by the name of Drew Wolitarski. And I mean, the story is so vividly clear for me now, because those coaches have now since told the story of they thought they scored with about 45 seconds left. They're celebrating in the press box. Turns out he's ruled down at the one. No one realizes the clock is running and Minnesota calls a plays with four shifts and motions.
Yep.
No one tells the head coach Jerry Kill to call a timeout at any point. Minnesota doesn't score on a goal line and Michigan walks away with a gifted victory. So, I mean, here's what I'll say is for the game on Saturday night, I'm not meaning to blow smoke, but I think this might be the most talented team that PJ Fleck has arguably played in his head coaching tenure. I think it's certainly the most talented Michigan team that I've covered or have seen in person. I think it's the most talented team that Minnesota's played since probably 2018 Ohio State. Now, Minnesota, like we've talked about, isn't a pushover. Minnesota has the talent to compete in any game that they play in this year, but they haven't been able to play 60 minutes of complimentary football consistently at any point, whether it's offense, defense, and special teams. So I just have a hard time kind of believing it's all going to come together against a team like Michigan. Now, to your point, Minnesota's played better at home than on the road. It's going to be a sellout. I think the atmosphere is going to be really good here at Huntington Bank Stadium. But if Minnesota is going to have a chance in this game, it comes down to explosive plays. You can't allow, you know, whether it's Donovan Edwards, Blake Corum, JJ McCarthy, to generate explosive plays, make them go the whole length of the field, which they're certainly capable of doing. But offensively, Michigan hasn't allowed more than 7 points in any game. If you're going to have a shot at this thing, you got to get to at least 17, if not 20. So it's going to be just coming out with a DGAF mentality on offense. You have to throw the entire kitchen cupboard out there, because to your point, you're a 3-touchdown home underdog. What do you have to lose? No one thinks you're going to win this game publicly, but you have to at least throw everything you can to try and give Michigan fits, because they're just too talented to win against 11-on-11. So that's what I want to see, is Minnesota come out and play with more of a reckless mentality that they have nothing to lose, because they truly don't. No one's expecting you to win this game. That's the number 2 team in the country, a team that is a college football playoff contender. a team that the Senior Bowl is going to take 55 of their players from after the season. So, again, Minnesota is certainly capable of making this a game into the second half, maybe giving Harbaugh maybe a run for his money a little bit. But it's going to come down to they have to execute at a high level, and that starts with the quarterback, Ethan Kaliak-Manis.
Ryan Burns covers the Minnesota Gophers over at Gopher Illustrated, part of our 24/7 sports network. Ryan, this was excellent. Thank you so much for taking us behind enemy lines, giving us some insight into what to expect up at Huntington Bank Stadium this weekend. Can't wait to see you there.
All right. See you in the press box on Saturday.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we are back, folks, on the Michigan Insider, Michigan.247sports.com. Alejandro Zuniga going behind enemy lines and welcoming in our recurring guest from the Michigan State football beat. Got Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate. Stephen, I feel like there were three major storylines for the Michigan State Spartans over the past week, and maybe we can touch a little bit on all of them. The first one that broke kind of before the Michigan State game at Iowa last weekend was that it seemed like there were some NIL shakeups in East Lansing. There were reports of varying degrees that an NIL collective, Spartan Dogs for Life, had canceled or readjusted portions of NIL deals that they had with Michigan State football players. That news was breaking on the eve of that night game that Michigan State lost at Iowa. So what's the latest with that situation? I know things have been shaky all fall in East Lansing, given the whole coaching situation, but where are things standing with that?
Yeah, so it was about as bad a timing as you could have asked for. What I heard was that kids were literally getting emails on the team playing before takeoff, so learning like, hey, your deal's been revoked immediately, basically. So horrible, horrible timing there for a team that's going through a lot, you know, as you guys all know, and then it was, you know, we've discussed on here. So yeah, the collective, which just recently, I mean, not even a month ago, I want to say, became the official, you know, university sort of acknowledged sponsor. I don't want to say backed, of course, like they're not, the university can't contribute money. We all know that, but they've been sort of, they put out a video with Tom Izzo and Robin Freilich, the women's basketball coach, and Adam Nightingale, the hockey coach. I assume Mel Tucker would have been in it. I think they probably had to do some editing there. I don't think he was just left out initially, but, the university sort of, you know, acknowledged it and embraced it as the official collective. And then, yeah, the news breaks there. They went from sponsoring, you know, from having deals with the majority of the football players, or at least a very good chunk of them, to now a select few. What I heard, it was under five, you know, five or less, to those who remain. So Big deal there. Obviously, these guys are, they're counting on that money in many regards. It's another blow, another unexpected rug pull, in a season that's pretty much been defined by a major one. So not great there. There's been reports. I don't have this information myself, but other people have reported that This Is Sparta, which is another collective, has stepped up and done some things to make it right and sort of try to fill the gap there. I don't have any details for you on that, but that's basically the situation there. With that, and that was supposed to be, again, their big overarching collective that was really supposed to take care of everybody.
So that's the news that breaks the night before the game. And so maybe it sounds like, players getting emails or getting told while they're on the plane heading to Iowa for a football game. And then there's a football game itself that happens, of course. And this is one that I had my eye on. I was watching it post game of after the Michigan Nebraska game out in Lincoln. And it was a game that, at least from what I saw, it looked like Michigan State had pretty decent control of for a while, right? I mean, Cade McNamara, he goes down with an injury. I think it was officially confirmed today that he'll be out for the year. So Iowa's on its backup quarterback. Michigan State drives the ball pretty decently for good portions of that game, and then can't pull away, can't pull away. And then, second half, Iowa does what Iowa does and wins a special teams battle. They get that punt return for a touchdown from Cooper DeJean, and they end up winning that game 26 to 16. I know Noah Kim had a few backbreaking interceptions, as has been the case for the last couple of weeks, but Spartans on the football field have lost three in a row. It was the sort of game that, again, there were some positives in the way that Michigan State was at least able to move the ball, but still unable to get it done since the Mel Tucker news broke. What were your lasting impressions from that game as the Spartans head into a bye week?
Yeah, I had been saying, I might have even said it on here. It felt like the team had, or at least you could have seen, because I don't think the wheels have come off yet, right? I said that after Maryland. I'll say that again here. I don't think these guys have quit or thrown in the towel. I think you can, it's very evident if you watch that game or the Maryland game. I think these guys are still fighting. That's number one. And I'm going to keep saying that because, I mean, this is so delicate and fragile right now that you have to, it has to be at the top of your mind. It's like, when or if, will these guys' spirits break just given everything that's happened and the possibilities on the table for them? So they fought. You like that. And when you double up Iowa's rushing total, I mean, my gosh, if you just look at the box score, you'd say, man, Michigan State should have ran away with this thing almost. You double up an Iowa team on the ground rushing yardage wise, like, how many times can you say that and you don't win the game? It's incredible. They did do something that, so yeah, they ran the ball well, better than they have against any Power Five opponent. But then the mistakes were absolutely backbreaking, as you said. The three interceptions from Noah Kim, the first one especially, they're up 6-3. I want to say they were driving, would have put them up two possessions there. And he throws a pick out of the back of the end, in the back of the end zone, and the mood completely changed there. Whereas Michigan State, they had just, Iowa just lost Cade. Things, they were kind of fumbling over themselves. Michigan State was sort of gaining confidence. It drove back into Iowa territory, and then you throw that pick, and they really didn't regain that sort of feel of confidence, the rest of the game. It was pretty tight. So, and then later on, you have two backbreaking special teams errors. And Ryan Eckley, their punter, Bryce Behringer just left, got drafted in the NFL, might have been the best punter in program history. He was a really, really good player. And Eckley's having a heck of a night that, he's doing a Bryce Behringer impression. Until the end, if he shanks one for 15 yards, Iowa kicks the field goal, ties the game. His next punt, they were aligned to make it a directional deal. It was supposed to go left. That's where all their coverage was. They had both their gunners on the left side of their formation. And it went sort of middle right and gave Cooper DeJean a short field and a pretty clear alley right up that sideline. Not clear, it wasn't clear as day because they definitely could have got him on the ground. There was some bad tackling, some bad angles, but they gave him the best possible path, against that look. And boom, that basically ended it. So I've just been saying, it seems like this team I thought would have one sort of last big punch in it before the wheels come off, if the, or things go to sort of a darker place. And it seemed like that was happening, right? It seemed like it was going to be that feel good win, even without Cade. You beat Iowa at Kinnick, like, that's always a big deal. And it just seemed like things were finally coming together for this team. Like, I wrote my column afterwards, something good has to happen for these guys sooner or later, sooner preferably, obviously, for their sake. Or you just really wonder about where it could go. And it seemed like that was going to happen, and obviously it did not.
And certainly, Michigan State fans are going to spend most of this fall looking ahead. I know you're just coming from Michigan State Basketball Media Day, so there's something for Michigan State fans to look forward to. Of course, is what should be an exciting Spartan basketball season. But then there's also, of course, the coaching search, and I know that Michigan State leadership sent out a message about that over the weekend or in the last couple of days. I know there have been, rumors flying around already about Urban Meyer, which I suppose makes sense, given that he is not coaching right now, and all the other college coaching candidates are for the most part with their respective teams. Steven, what's the latest with that, knowing that it still is very early in the process and a lot of this is probably just hearsay?
Right. Yeah. I think they're just taking those initial steps right now. Alan Heller put out that community letter, they called it. And just, you said it's going to be a national search, which of course you expect to hear. He said, he expects to talk to multiple people. The thing that people hung up on is that he said, most candidates, are busy with their seasons and their privacy is important and everything. Most people hung up on the most, meaning that you're not saying everybody. There's a candidate out there working on TV that you don't have to worry about a season schedule with and all that. So I really, other than everybody having their own names and shortlists and ideas, like, I don't think there's an official committee put together yet, as far as I'm aware, to assist Alan Haller in this. So, I don't even know how many conversations he's had, just with people he needs to talk to about how he wants to proceed here. We're very, very early in this, but the latest thing, right? The Urban Meyer is the flavor of the week. I do think that there's some folks around the university and the program that are trying to sort of gauge the public reception to that. And look, it might sound pie in the sky to some people, but he had interest in the job 20 years ago. Now, that was 20 years ago. I get it. He's not doing anything now, though. He's young enough where you could see him getting back into coaching. Obviously, he's familiar with the conference and the region. I don't give it a very, we're talking about single digit likelihood, I think, here percentage wise, but it's not zero, I don't think either. And my only thing with that right now is just that Michigan State has to take it seriously. Now, if he shuts them down or whatever, that's fine. And, or if you're only using them as a resource to help you find somebody else and say, hey, Urban, what do you think about X, Y, or Z? That's fine too. But it can't be summarily dismissed. I know there's going to be a lot of people, there's some people that would never be comfortable with it. Even if he came here and won a national championship, some people would never fully be okay. My thing is just the Michigan State, the people that are important over there and have power and money, the people that are actually going to be making these decisions, they can't just dismiss him summarily because I just think that he's too good of a coach. He's too good of a fit in so many ways. And there's obviously ways where he's not a fit, but there's so many things aligned where I think that you just have to have that conversation. And give your due diligence, give him the re a reasonable look and give him that respect. If they come out on the other side of it and game it out and say, we can't do this, we can't take the hit, or it's just not the right thing, whatever, then that's fine. But to not even give him a realistic look, I think would be malpractice. I think they absolutely have to.
Speaking of money and financial matters, I actually I don't know the answer to this, Stephen, but when the Mel Tucker news first broke, the idea was there was going to be a committee, there was going to be an investigation and like a sort of hearing at Michigan State during the bye week. Is that still on the table, or have things changed with that, given that, he's been more formally fired?
Yeah, no, my understanding is that's still proceeding. I guess I can't speak to like whether Tucker will show up or be cooperative necessarily, because I really don't know what obligation he would have, unless I guess his lawyers are telling him like, show up, do this, say this, and then present your case in this way or whatever, and this will help us on the back end, because he has, pretty strongly hinted that he's going to be taking legal action and I believe suing for wrongful termination and everything. But yeah, I've been kind of curious about that too, because he's not a university employee, so would he even have to show up or cooperate in any way? I don't know, unless it's, or he or his lawyers or whoever think it's advantageous to do that for their betterment later on in this process. But as far as I know, yeah, it's still scheduled and still expected to happen.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much. I know it's been a very busy few weeks, and especially when you're combining Big Ten road trips, late night games, basketball media day. Appreciate you taking the time to take us behind enemy lines over with the Michigan State football program. We'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely, man. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for this week's episode of Behind Enemy Lines. Plenty more content to come, both on this podcast feed and over at themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. Our staff, myself, Zach Shaw, Steve Lorenz, Bryce Marich, and of course Sam Webb, we are at every Michigan availability, every Michigan game. We are starting to turn our eye toward basketball and hockey as well. So whether you're looking for recruiting coverage, expert breakdowns of what Michigan did to dominate Nebraska the way they did last weekend, statistical analysis of what to expect between the Wolverines and Gophers this weekend, or whether you're just gearing up for hockey season and what should be another fun year on the ice, it's over at the Michigan Insider. Once again, I'm Alejandro Zuniga. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.